governor, rest of the executive branch? And that's a good question. But the judicial branch is partly statewide and partly local. Most of the courts are local, that is to say at the county or district level. And so it makes sense to cover it with local government. The other thing is putting executive, budget, and judiciary all together sort of overloads the plate. There's a little bit too much in there. I can either hit the judicial branch a lick and a promise with the executive and financing, or I can hit it a lick and promise with local government. And I just decided to hit it a local lick and a promise with the local government. Fair enough? It's a judgment call. And since I'm driving the train, we'll do it that way. Now, you remember that we took a look at the Texas executive system. What do we remember about it compared with, say, California, New York? And by the way, I've got to tell you honestly, there are no states that use perfectly integrated executive system. That is, you will not find a state that is completely this way, where the governor is responsible for appointing everybody in the administration. Okay? They all tend to be, if I can use an analogy, 100% this way or 100% this way, somewhere in the middle. But Texas is more toward the unintegrated than it is the integrated. There are some elements of administrative integration in the Texas system, but they're pretty minimal. There are some elements of administrative decentralization in New York, which is a good example of a very integrated system, but it's just a smidgen. Fair enough? So if you're looking for, now this is a totally tacky one. Somebody asked me one time if, when I was single, I was looking for the perfect woman. And I said yes, but when I found her, she was looking for the perfect man and I didn't qualify. Somebody reported that to my wife and she said, "What do you mean I'm not perfect?" I said, "If you were perfect, you wouldn't judge, you wouldn't question me." Touché. Or touchy, as somebody who doesn't speak French would say. So what does the executive branch do? We're going to run back over this. Administer the laws, policy making. Now what makes the Texas system interesting is that these functions are spread out among a number of elected and appointed officials. So that if you look at the governorship of Texas and say, "All right, governor, you're responsible for enforcing the law." Is that accurate? No. Now, a lot of governors, including our current governor, how many of you have ever saw The Wizard of Oz? Okay, you remember the professor behind the curtain, "I am the great and powerful wizard," you know, and Toto pulls back the curtain and you discover that he really isn't. All right, I'm going to be Toto today. When I pull back the curtain, I'm going to reveal that a lot of what governors pretend to be able to do, they have no power to do. You know, you notice that Governor Abbott showed up in Dallas and "I'm going to do this and that and the other about sanctuary cities." And that was met with a collective yawn. Why? Because most officials know you ain't got no control whatsoever on this issue, so stick a sock in it. That's a federal issue, end of sentence. And elected sheriffs and city police departments are not under the control of the governor in any way, form, shape, or type. And they really don't give a rat's tail what kind of publicity-seeking PR type stuff he does. Now, I got a joke to tell you. This was one of Ann Richards' favorites. Back when Ma Ferguson was governor of Texas, she was getting onto the elevator, and another person was getting on the elevator by at the same time and accidentally stepped on her foot. And he said, oh, pardon me, governor. And she said, I'm sorry. I don't have any control over that. You'll have to see my husband. So many of these functions that we talk about are spread. Is that an accident? No. Why? When the drafters of the 1876 Constitution were putting the document together, they knew what an integrated system looked like, and they knew how it worked. And they were absolutely dead set on not having one. Why?
I'm not sure.
Well, had they had a pretty integrated system under Edmund J. Davis during Reconstruction?
Yes.
What's your best guess?
Yes.
Yeah. And they didn't like the results. And so sometimes pendulums swing in different directions, and the pendulum swung back to almost a totally unintegrated, decentralized system. Now, what we have done in the last 100 years, but more specifically in the last 50 years, is we have reintegrated some of the power so that the governor today is a lot more powerful than he was 50, 100 years ago. But if we can do this little graph on the swinging of the pendulum, it's only moved about 3 or 4 degrees. It hadn't moved back to dead center by any means. So that's the reason when political scientists evaluate how powerful the governor of Texas is, and they use a number of criteria, budget powers, administrative powers, and so forth, where do we rank? Well, let's do it first. The top half or the bottom half?
Bottom half.
The top quarter or the bottom quarter?
Bottom quarter.
At the absolute top of the scale or at the absolute bottom of the scale? Well, it depends on whose studies you look at. One of the more popular studies ranks the Texas governor as tied at 49th with the governor of Nevada. They're both equally powerless. I'm not sure that's a completely valid study, but I'm not going to fight them over it. We talked about the qualifications. 30 years of age, U.S. citizen, resident of the state for 5 years, we compensate. Now, how does this compensation compare with the compensation of governors in other states? With the high end of the scale or at the low end of the scale? I mean, I know you don't really know, but would you like to venture a guess?
Low.
Believe it or not, the answer is toward the high end. There are only 4 states that pay the governor more than the governor of Texas. It is a relatively underpaid position. There are, somebody jokingly said, if I were governor of Texas, what office would I aspire to hold after I left the governorship? And the answer is chancellor of one of the major universities of Texas, or head coach at one of the major football teams for the major universities. We currently pay, the University of Texas, pays the head coach over $1 million a year. Yes. So, and if I could come back as anything in my life, I would come back as the head coach of a major football team. However, what's the downside?
You have to win.
You got to produce or die. There's no such thing as a bad season that doesn't have consequences. When we look at the powers of the governor of Texas, legislative power, interestingly enough, the governor of Texas is tied with nearly all other governors of all other states in terms of legislative power because they have about the same power. So if you're trying to rank them on legislative power, it's a wash. On judicial power, however, the governor ranks very low. Maybe not the worst, But he's certainly working at, the legislature certainly worked at making it just about the worst. And why don't governors fight tooth and toenail to get the legislature to increase their power over pardons, paroles, reprieves, commutations, and so forth? In fact, Governor White went to the legislature and suggested that they take away his power to parole people. The sole power, clemency power, of the governor of Texas is to give you one 30-day stay of execution. That is unlimited power. He can rubber stamp the Board of Pardons and Paroles request on pardons. He can rubber stamp the Board of Pardons and Paroles on reprieves, but has no control. Now, I know some of you are about half asleep because it's early in the morning, and we know teenagers and young adults have a problem with 8 o'clock classes. Look around if you don't believe me. Remind me, I'll check roll in a minute. If I put an absolute question on the test, the governor how much parole power does the governor of Texas have? What's the answer? Zero, zip, none, nada. He couldn't parole his mother. And Mark White went in and asked the legislature to do that. Any idea why?
No clue. I have no clue.
Yes.
Does anybody pay any attention to your having paroled 100 people who deserved it?
No.
But do the news media get their underwear in a total bunch about the one person you paroled who then reverted to a life of crime?
Mm-hmm.
You're all too young to remember the Willie Horton ad, but it's on YouTube if you want to Google it. Poor old Governor Dukakis had paroled, and it was pretty much an automatic process. The governor really didn't review everybody's record. They were presented to them by the prison people, and they said, well, he's, you know, parole him. And he went out and committed a murder and some other dastardly deeds, and it was used against him when he ran for president. He won a president that would parole a convicted murderer. So right after that, Governor White went to the legislature and said, hey, I really don't need to be in the parole business. Let me out of it. And you will discover that governors all over the country have been moving away from having any parole power. You know, not me. I didn't do it. It was them. Governor's appointment power in Texas is pretty limited. It's subject to staggered terms, senatorial courtesy, we talked about that. The fact that most of the jobs are non-salaried, and it's kind of hard to talk people into taking a non-salaried job unless there's some real advantage to taking the job. I know I did, but I told you that Governor White's appointment secretary contacted me on a regular basis. Oh, we'd love to have you take this unpaid, unsung, hard, time-consuming job on some board that nobody's ever heard of. Thank you, but no thank you. You know, do you have a job cleaning out stables somewhere? It's about the same. Can the governor huff and puff and tell some of the people that he appointed to one of these boards and commissions, shape up or I'm going to kick you out? Well, let's see. He can only remove someone for cause if two-thirds of the Senate concurs. That particular provision has been in the Texas Constitution now for over 20 years. Guess how many people have been removed under that provision? You got it, Jessica. The big O. Zip. Now, the governor can put some pressure on people. He can, you know, okay, I'm going to shame you to death. I'm going to release a press conference, have a press conference and tell everybody what an absolute idiot you are. Or you can resign. But if somebody wanted to stand up to the governor and say, stuff it, Gov, I'm not about to resign, what can he do about it? He can take a chance that he'll get 2/3 of the Senate to go along. But if the legislature's not in session, he's got to call a special session to do that, doesn't he? And what if he calls a special session and they don't do it? Is the media going to pay real close attention to that? Are they going to say, Governor Blah has no swoop with the Senate? I'm sorry, I may overuse the analogy of the Wizard of Oz. But in Texas, most of the governor's real power comes from the Wizard of Oz effect. So long as he can persuade people that he is the great and powerful wizard, he maybe can get things done. But once Toto pulls back the curtain, he gets very vulnerable in the next election. Governor's budget powers, remember, he has to share those. First off, budget proposal. Does the legislature normally pay a whole lot of attention to the governor's budget proposals? If the legislature really and truly wants to do something, they may go talk to the governor and persuade him to endorse it. In which case, the Wizard of Oz effect takes place, right? I have proposed such and such, and the legislature complied. See how strong I am? But what if it happens to be an unsolicited proposal that no member of the legislature, or most of the members of the legislature, aren't really that enthralled with? Too bad, so sad. They pay attention to the Legislative Budget Board draft, not to the governor's. Remember how I told you that Ann Richards just basically recognized that fact and cut her budget proposal down to a little 30 or 40 page? In fact, in his very first term as governor, right after George Bush assumed the presidency and resigned as governor of Texas, Rick Perry did not even present a budget proposal to the legislature. And he got criticized for it. So the next session, he submitted a one-page budget proposal. He called it his zero-based budget. Legislative, zero. Executive, zero. Judicial, zero. Y'all fill in the blanks. After that, he began to follow Ann Richards' proposal. He's got an item veto. All governors have item veto, so that doesn't get you improved on the rating. And interestingly, all 50 governors have more budget veto power than the President of the United States. They can do an item veto, and the President can't. Now, with budget execution authority, it ranges all the way from Governor of New York, who can move huge chunks of money around in the budget, to the governor of Texas, who can't move more than $200,000 without permission from the LBB.
Please, Daddy, let me move the money.
Maybe it's not quite that bad. Oh man, he can appoint the adjutant general. Real powerful, right? Except he can only appoint people that the U.S. military has already agreed can be on the promotion list. He can order the National Guard for natural disasters, peacekeeping, control of the Texas Rangers, Public Safety Board, appoints the Board of Pardons and Paroles, one stay of execution, has a staff, most of which, not the entire majority, but most of which are engaged in monitoring federal grants and are paid for by the federal government. It's all right. Now, we talked about the parole executive, and this is where we were. We talked about the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general. I don't think we mentioned this is where we got to, right? All of a sudden, I jumped there. I hit the wrong button. I'm not going to spend hours laying out each one of those offices. There's a fairly good discussion of them in your textbook, and we'll hit them just briefly. The Attorney General is the chief's legal officer in civil cases. Oh, we did talk about this. Civil cases, not criminal cases. Ms. Blackwelder, pick on you for a second. I've only found one article in which somebody evaluated the role of attorney generals in states. Okay? In about a third of the states, they're elected, as they are in Texas. Mm-hmm. And in about two-thirds of the states, they're appointed by the governor.
Okay.
In a little over half of the states, they are the chief prosecuting agent for the state. But in about half the states, they have little or no real prosecuting authority. Okay. Texas comes in at the absolute no prosecuting authority. The local district attorney is the final word on prosecution. That may change.
Okay.
There has been so much prosecutorial misconduct by district attorneys. See, they're only theoretically responsible to the voters, and the voters don't really know that they're engaged in prosecutorial misconduct unless the newspaper jump out there and start looking at it real hard.
Yeah.
And in many of these smaller counties, the newspaper is not going to go out on a limb on that sort of thing, or doesn't have the staff to do it. So there's suggestions floating around Austin, and it may happen that the Attorney General will get the responsibility to review how district attorneys perform. Some serious discussion on that. Represents the state in legal actions, of course civil, enforces state laws. Probably the most important, and I could put this in Super Bowl print, probably the most important responsibilities are representing the state in legal actions and issuing opinions on legal issues. The reason that's important, and it let's be honest about it, the Attorney General does not actually do the opinions. They have a staff of highly trained, very competent lawyers who go in and evaluate what the court decisions have been, what decisions have been in other states, and say, okay, if we were judges and this question came up, what kind of ruling would we most likely make? Alejandra, does that make sense to you? It saves the cost of going to court on issues that you really just want to know. Local officials might want to know, can we do this or not? You know, can we issue a permit to do X, Y, and Z? Now, one of the things that I have you do, if you do the online project, one of the extra credit projects, is go to the Attorney General's website and pick one of the opinions and look at it. And they're all posted. What's it on? What's the question? And how'd they decide it? And then victims of these two are really functions that the legislature threw in the Attorney General's lap because they didn't know of any other place to put them. But every Attorney General that I know of for about the last 25, 30 years have been saying, we can't really do child support. That's not our mission. Put it in the Department of Human Resources. Put it somewhere else, but don't put it here. Because they can look at us and say, yeah, you can't prosecute me because you have no criminal prosecuting authority. You can't seize their assets because 90% of them don't have any assets to begin with. If they did, they'd be paying child support. We're not going to put them in jail because all that does is give them a free meal and a place to live. Comptroller, if somebody asks me what is the most important job of the comptroller, it's in the budget process, and we're going to talk about this, making estimates of how much money the state is going to have and where it's going to go. And periodically you will see in the newspaper, the comptroller releases reports on here's how much money the legislature is likely to have. Now, when we get to looking at the budget process next Tuesday, stop and think for a second, next Monday, the legislature can pass any budget it wants to, but if the comptroller won't certify there's going to be enough money to fund it, they go back to square one. Oh, unless four-fifths of both houses of the legislature decide to override the comptroller, in which case they can pass the budget. Would you like to guess how many times that's been done? The big O. Zero. The rest of it's pretty routine. You collect the money that doesn't go elsewhere, and you pay the bills. And you got a pretty good sized staff to do that. Did anybody see a rather interesting little article in the Galveston Daily News either yesterday or day before, because I sometimes stack them up and read them for two or three days at a time, where the new land commissioner, who is the new land commissioner? Jerry Patterson was the land commissioner, but he resigned to run for another office and didn't make it. One of the big questions that Galveston is concerned about is, what do we do about the erosion and who owns land on the far west end of the island? And the Texas Supreme Court, after Ike, rendered a decision. The traditional law has been the line, the state's ownership of the property is the point of mean higher high tide, or the vegetation line, whichever is the furthest landward. And in the Severance case, and you may remember that after Ike, there were a number of houses where the beach had eroded so much that they were out on the beach. Do you still own the land if it's out on the beach? And in the Severance case, the Supreme Court, Texas Supreme Court, said yes. And Jerry Patterson fought that. Well, the new land commissioner, anybody know who he is? I'll give you a hint. His name is not unknown to Texas politics.
George Bush.
Kathy?
Bush.
Not George.
Bush.
Yeah, Bush. And who is he related to? It's not George. Jeb. Jeb's son. He's responsible for coastal zone management, and he's decided that the Severance case should be the case. Needless to say, Galveston County officials, both Democrat and Republican, are not real thrilled with that decision. Department of Agriculture. I won't even ask you who the Commissioner of Agriculture is. I'll let you look it up. I'm not going to ask it on a test question. What is really the main job of the Commissioner of Agriculture in Texas? Now, if we really name the thing to accurately reflect, it would not be called the Agriculture Commission. It would be called the Division of Weights and Measures. Because the biggest percentage of the responsibility of the Texas Department of Agriculture is certifying scales and making sure that the pumps are accurate. Now, is that a really charismatic, I was going to use the word sexy, but would you like to run for the office of Commissioner of Weights and Measures? Does that just have much swoop? Why, it was, when it was created by the legislature in the 1920s, a very powerful office. But what's changed? Look the way it says on there. Regulating the sector of the economy not covered by federal law. After the Depression, U.S. Department of Agriculture took major responsibility, and the legislature has done this, the Congress has done it both under Democratic and Republican administrations, giving the USDA responsibility for things like pesticides, herbicides, food grading. Right now the big issue has to do with poultry. This most recent outbreak of bird flu, which killed off something like 60 or 65% of the chicken production in the country, has forced them to start looking at what standards. When you cram chickens into a cage that's 2 foot by 2 foot, and not one chicken, but several chickens in a little cage that's 24 by 24 or 24 by 36, and you put 50,000 of them in a building, what's the chances of a disease, a communicable disease, spreading? You can Now, inoculate people for bird flu, but can you imagine inoculating 50,000 chickens? Oh, I got to tell you one, and I hope I don't upset anybody. When the little chicks hatch out, guess what happens to all the little male chicks? They are, except for those that are kept around as roosters, they're euthanized. So who determines whether it's a, but until it grows up, who determines whether it's a male chick or a female chick? Of all the jobs I would not want to have, it would be a chicken sexer. Can you imagine spending your entire day, never mind. Keep moving. Railroad Commission. If we really name that accurately, what would it be called? That's the first time I've seen Miss King grin today. Good. What would you really call the Texas Railroad Commission? And the legislature, for some reason, has for the last 8 years failed to pass a proposed constitutional amendment. Now, why constitutional amendment? Because this agency set up in the Constitution. Back in the Progressive era, they wanted to make sure that a legislature couldn't be bought out by the railroads and abolish the Railroad Commission, which was responsible for regulating railroads, so they put it in the Constitution. Now, we would never do something like put something like that in the Constitution, the Texas Constitution today, would we? Did I give you that sheet of the proposed 7 constitutional amendments? Did you read it? Read it. There are some of the most innocuous provisions in that thing, like granting counties with a population of 7,500 or less the authority to contract with individuals to help with their roads. And of course, the one that guarantees you the right to hunt and fish, provided that you follow all the laws. Can you think of a more inane provision? Is that like, I'm politicking now, okay. Is that a little bit like putting a provision in your Constitution that says sunrise will be in the morning and sunset will be in the evening? I'm surprised that some of our legislators have not thought about a tremendously important amendment to require that the sun come up in the morning and set only in the evening, because they could probably stick it in the Constitution. Okay, did I make my point? Yeah, so we got this in there. But what should it really be called?
I don't know.
The Texas Energy Department. Because what is 97-98% of their function? Is it regulating railroads? No. Now, it doesn't regulate. It used to be regulation of intrastate rail transport. Okay, intrastate road transport. Up till about 30 years ago, that was a pretty big chunk of the responsibility of the Texas Railroad Commission. You okay?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That was a pretty good chunk of their thing. But then we changed the interstate commerce law to provide that if you're using interstate highways, and ask me how you're going to get around without using, you're going to haul stuff anywhere without using interstate highways, you are being regulated by the United States Department of Transportation. So exactly what happened to the Texas Department of Agriculture is what has happened to the Texas Railroad Commission on that same function. It has been preempted by the national government. So, yeah, any intrastate road transport that is not covered under the federal law will be regulated by the Texas Railroad Commission. Would you like to guess what percentage that is? Just enough to be a nuisance, just about maybe 5%. Regulation of pipelines, regulation of oil and mineral and mining extractive industries, that's the big part. And those are used. What do we extract? 90, oh, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's 90 plus percent of the minerals in Texas are related to energy. There are a few that aren't. Sulfur, limestone, gypsum. There's a few extractive industries that are not related to the energy industry, but they're the tail on a very big dog. And they don't really create any real problems, unless you just happen to be real close to a limestone mine and the dust is an issue. Now, this is where we did not cover it. The State Board of Education is one of those vestigial, this is the appendix of Texas agencies. Now, I use that analogy very carefully. Can you live without an appendix?
Yes.
I think I'm a example of that, because back in 1997, I went in and took out a part of my colon because it had ruptured, and they said, oh, while we're in there, we just took out your appendix, you don't need it. Just likely to create problems in the future. Has no real function, but it can cause lots of trouble. And that's pretty much true. Now, how do you get on the Texas Board of Education? Well, you're elected to it. Can anybody name me who the Texas State Board of Education member that represents Galveston County is? If so, you're one of the very few in the last 20 years that have been able to do it. So what do they do? Well, interestingly enough, the legislature has taken away most of the responsibilities of the State Board of Education, because they just, like the appendix, create problems. They theoretically recommend the Commissioner of Education to the governor, but the first governor, who just basically put his foot down and said you can recommend anybody you want to so long as their name is and named a particular person, because that's the only person I'm going to appoint to the job, and there was a standoff for a period of time, and finally George W. Bush got his way. They manage the investments of the permanent school fund, but there are so many restrictions on how that money can be invested and done that it's pretty minimal responsibility. The staff does it. The only real function of the Texas Department, State Department of Education, not the Texas Department of Education, but the State Board of Education, is to approve textbooks. And how many of you have been following the flaps that have occurred recently with the Texas State Board of Education's method of selecting textbooks and quality of textbooks selected? Oh, it's been an interesting one. There are about, it's a minority, but still a significant minority of the State Board of Education who belong to what would best be called the Flat Earth Society. They don't believe in evolution, and they want the biology books to reflect that. And the most recent flap was one on the state-approved textbook, history textbook, that said there were millions of African Americans imported in Texas, imported to the South as workers, not as slaves. The textbook, once a student caught that, and the textbook manufacturer then issued stickers to put over that particular caption in the book. But the process that the State Board of Education used to vet the textbooks didn't catch that little minor error. And the people who were charged with reading the textbook admitted that they really hadn't read the whole thing. They hadn't had time. All right, the governor gets to appoint Secretary of State, Adjutant General, Commissioner of Education. Now let me go through that. It was very, very fast. Secretary of State is a constitutional office. It has the responsibility of being the chief election official for the state of Texas, granting charters to corporations, and processing extradition requests. And a fourth thing, they are officially the agency that keeps all of the past state laws, etc. It's got a very good website. If you're interested in anything concerning elections, look at the Texas State Department, Texas Secretary of State. Again, the Railroad Commission and the State Board of Education are elected. 3 members on the Railroad Commission, 15 members on the State Board of Education. How much do you get paid for being on the State Board of Education?
Nada.
Now, I can go back and talk to you about the Commissioner of Insurance, the Director of the Department of Community Affairs, Commissioner of Education, and the Director of the Texas Department of Health if you really, 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 really want to know about it. But if you want to, you can just look it up on the website. Now, unless they suddenly start doing fire drill, let's talk about the bureaucracy, and we can do that in about 20 minutes. Fair enough? The typical state agency in Texas, there are exceptions, but the typical state agency in Texas is headed up by a multi-member board or commission whose normal membership is divisible by three. Now, the provision in the Texas Constitution that required it be divisible by three was eliminated several years ago, but the legislature has just continued to put it. Why? Well, because they serve 6-year overlapping terms, and 7 is not easily divisible by 3, is it? 5 is not easily divisible by 3. 6 is. 9 is. 3 is. So, one-third of the members rotate off every 6 years. And how much do you get paid, with a few exceptions, for being on one of these boards or commissions? That's right. Say it up loud.
Nothing.
Nada. Nothing. So why would anybody want to be on it? Well, think for a moment. The Texas Veterinary Medicine Board. If you're a vet and you're licensed by the Texas Board of Veterinary Medicine, do you have a real interest in what kinds of rules and regulations that agency makes? My wife is a nurse, nurse practitioner, and a professor of nursing. The Texas Department of Nursing is responsible for licensing and regulating nurses. Now, we could take the time to go look at any one of those state agencies, and what you're going to discover is that in most instances, particularly with the licensing agencies, and they constitute about 2/3 of all the state agencies. They're not the biggies, but they're the most numerous. There are specific requirements. For example, if we had the time, and I don't want to take the time, okay? I could go to the Texas Department of Veterinary Medicine or the Texas Nursing Board, and there are specific requirements for each position. So, yes, a vacancy comes up this year, but this is for a person who heads up a baccalaureate nursing program in a major university, or a position for a nurse who has this particular specialty or background. So you're the governor's appointment secretary. You got to find people who meet those specific requirements who are willing to serve. Who do you turn to? Are there professional associations? If we're talking about the nurses, Texas Nurses Association. Do you think that the Texas Nurses Association might be able to provide you with the names of people who are willing to serve on your board? Veterinary medicine. Believe it or not, there is an association of equine veterinarians. What's an equine veterinarian? What do they treat?
Horses.
There are veterinarians who primarily deal with birds. There are veterinarians that primarily deal with small animals. And they have associations. And so if you're the governor's appointment secretary and you're looking for a person to serve on one of these thankless provision type agencies, you turn to those various associations. Now, what's the downside to that? Have you got the foxes watching the chicken coop? Did that make sense to you? Would you put the foxes in charge of protecting the chickens in the chicken coop?
No.
But that's what we're doing when we appoint the people who have the most interest in what the regulations are for regulating themselves.
Gotcha.
With certain professional associations like nursing and medicine, it works pretty well. But when we start talking about insurance, maybe not so. And that's the reason that there was a change, and I'll point that out to you. So in the typical agency, and this is about 3/4 of the state agencies in the state of Texas, non-paid boards, membership divisible by 3, 6-year overlapping terms, no salary, and their job is to appoint the chief executive officer, who is then responsible for running the agency. Their main job is supervising the budget, picking the chief executive officer, and making whatever policy rules are necessary. Right? Remember we went back and talked about PPB? Personnel Policy Budget? The board is responsible for that. Now, typical kinds of agencies. Administrative, primarily carry out the law. Service agencies provide duties that could be privatized, but the legislature has decided to keep them under the control of the government. And regulatory, regulator controls some functions. Now, this is a really neat classification schema. There's only one problem with it. Would anybody like to guess what it is?
They don't fit into the categories.
Biggest percentage of agencies do all three. It may be primarily administrative, it may be primarily service, it may be primarily regulatory, but it may have all the other functions thrown in as well. Let me give you an example of one of each. Fair enough? And then we'll mix it up. Texas Board of Nursing, primarily regulatory, regulates the nursing profession. Texas Water Board primarily helps local units of government finance and bill water supply systems. Administrative, a little hard to come up with one of those, to be honest about it. We don't have a lot of primarily administrative agencies in Texas, but we'll pick one. The Texas Department of Public Safety, which primarily is responsible for enforcing the state's traffic laws and other statewide laws that are not covered by local authority. That's where it gets confusing. Now let's talk about one that's got all of them. Texas Parks and Wildlife. Does it pass the regulations on hunting and fishing seasons? Yes. Does it have game and fish game and fish wardens that go out and enforce it? Yes. Do they operate parks that are basically state-owned KOAs? Yes. It's got all three, doesn't it? You could have a lot of fun trying to figure this out, but I don't want to work, don't want to do that. An agency of the government and its employees charged with specific tasks and duties to support and supported by public funding is a bureaucracy. Now, let's cut to the chase because we're going to run out of time, but we've got 20 minutes and we can do it smooth. If we look at all the state employees, these are state employees. Let the record reflect, I am not a state employee. I've worked for the Galveston College Community College District. It is not a state agency. It is quasi-state in that it's funded by the state. It operates under state law. But it is a local governmental agency. Fair enough? So I'm not in there. The biggest single category is education. And that does not include local school teachers because local school teachers are employed by local districts like Galveston Community College or GISD. Okay? So if we talked about all employees for the state of Texas who work for the not for the state government per se, but have some direct connection with the state, that 35% for education would be more like about 75%. That makes sense to you? You're not just being nice and shaking your head yes. Okay, good. Health and Human Services, next biggest chunk. Add those two up, and you get something like 62%, damn near close to two-thirds, of all state employees in Texas are in two functions. Education, health and human services. Business and economic development, and I've got to tell you that includes a whole lot of things, but the biggest chunk of that is the Texas Department of Highways. We used to just label it highways, but then they decided, oh no, we'll put business and economic development in, but 15 of that 18% is really the highway department. And public safety. Now, everything else is a whopping 11%. So when you get politicians who are running for office who are talking about, well, I'll go in and significantly cut the state budget, as a smart citizen, you look at them and say, so which educational functions and which health and human services functions do you want to cut out? And which roads do you want to close down? And which prisons do you want to close down? Because that's dang near 90% of it totally in terms of the total number of people who work for the state of Texas. Now, what are the issues when you're looking at bureaucracy? What authority do they have? How do they get their money? How are they structured? What kind of political support do they have? And who oversees them to make sure they're doing their job? Fair enough, those are the big issues. So in sources of authority, we have state constitutions, state laws, and federal law? Oh yeah. Can you think of any particular federal laws that apply to Galveston College? Would the discrimination laws apply to Galveston College? Yeah. Would the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, apply to Galveston College?
Yes.
Would the rules and regulations relating to financial support, such things as Pell Grants?
Yes.
Yes. Would FERPA, everybody familiar with FERPA? Federal Education Privacy Act?
Yes.
What kinds of information I can release? I have some people here in one of my other classes. Several of the guys on the baseball team said, oh, he's not going to be here. Let me just take his test for him. Can I do that?
No.
Nope, that's a violation of Federal Privacy Act. Your mother calls up, you're over 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your mother calls up and says, I want to know how my daughter's doing in your class. Can I tell her?
No.
Nope. Unless I have written permission from you to give that information to your mother, father, sister, brother, cousin, even husband. You're not maybe married, but I don't know, but even husband. Federal Education Privacy Act says no. And I've committed a federal crime if I do it. Would the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department have to worry a little bit about federal law?
Yeah.
Sure. Does the city of Galveston have to worry about federal law when it comes to dumping its treated sewage into the bay?
Yes.
Yeah. So does everybody understand where we're coming from on this? You just don't say, okay, only the state law or only the state constitution. It's the total mix. Where does the money come from? I had a really great extra credit project for this particular course a while back. And that was, I asked you to pick a state agency and simply spell out the sources of its funding. I thought it was a great project. I might as well have asked people to write the plans for the building of a new Eiffel Tower. Now, except for the fact that I'd have one person do the job and 47 other people copy it, I just ask you, what are the major sources of funding for Galveston College? Do we have any fees?
Yes.
Oh, you know that answer, right? Tuition and fees. Actually, it amounts to about one-third of the total amount of money the state that we get. Do we have any federal or state grants?
Yes.
Federal state grants. And the percentage of state money has gone down rather significantly over the last 15, 20 years. Dedicated revenue, not so much of that. State general revenue, that's where ours comes from. What's missing from that particular category? Because this is a local community college district, we also have property taxes. But state agencies are not going to have that, are they? But they might have other sources of income, like income they've earned by selling items. Now, Texas is the only major urban state in the union, I said urban now, big state, that doesn't have a statewide personnel system. Now, having made that complete, absolute statement, I've got to go take a part of it back. Back in the 1950s, the legislature got very concerned with the fact that people doing the same job for different agencies got paid very different salaries. And that created a lot of turnover as a result of people going to work for a low-paid agency, and as soon as a vacancy came available in a better-paying agency, jumping over, leaving the lower-paid agencies with incompetent help a lot of the time. So they came up with a state personnel classification and salary system so that if you're doing administrative assistant one at the University of Texas or Texas A&M University or the State Department of Health, you're on the same pay scale. And all of those classifications are monitored by the state personnel classification officer in the state auditor's office, who checks to make sure that you're not really fudging. Okay? And the courts informally supervise this by enforcing the discrimination laws. We have two retirement systems in Texas, the employee's retirement system and the teacher's retirement system. Which of these do you suspect is the bigger? Where are more people employed? In teaching, right? We talked about that. Now, which agency, which of these two retirement systems you belong to depends entirely on what the classification of the agency you work for happens to be. If you're working for an educational institution, irrespective of what you do, you're in teacher retirement. If you are working for a state agency that's non-education related, you're in employee's retirement. Now, the benefit scales are the same. There's no difference. We have a statewide health insurance system, and the state of Texas self-insures. That is to say, but we pay an insurance company to monitor, to handle the paperwork. The state doesn't create an agency to do it. The state pays. And most recently, the state of Texas went to Blue Cross Blue Shield for all of its statewide health insurance, except some educational institutions can use a different one. My wife and I both work for educational institutions, so we're both in teacher retirement. But she works for UTMB, so she's under Blue Cross Blue Shield's management. And I work for Galveston College, which is under United Healthcare. Okay. And the systems and the plans are just enough different to where I have to spend a bunch of time figuring out which way, which goes where. Which is better? They're about the same, truthfully. Is the public going to support all agencies equally? That is to say, if you're a state agency director, can you count on public support regardless of what agency you work for? No, not at all. Law enforcement, public education, the health services, the major universities, public, you generally jump up and support them. But if you happen to be, say, the insurance department or the Parks and Wildlife Department or some of the smaller major universities, our licensing agency, like Texas Department of Nursing, who do you have to rely on? Your client groups. Ms. Blackwelder, did that make sense to you? You're the Texas Railroad Commission. Who's going to step up to the plate for you?
Just me.
pipelines, the oil companies, the chemical companies, they're the ones that are going to be your team. You're the Texas Department of Insurance. Well, there it gets interesting. You've got the consumer groups on one side and the insurance companies on the other, and sometimes they agree and sometimes they don't. Does that put you in an interesting position if you happen to be the insurance commissioner?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sometimes you feel like you got your tail in a vice. Now the state of Texas does some oversight. There is a Sunset Commission, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Sunset Commission in a minute. There is limited executive oversight. Did you hear what I just said? Limited executive oversight. Technically, the Comptroller's Department does performance reviews, but the legislature has quit funding, for the most part, performance reviews in the Comptroller's office. The Council on Competitive Government, which is a totally toothless tiger, was established. The following is my personal opinion, brought to you by me. It was established to theoretically show that we were doing something, but it's never been funded, nor given the staff, nor given the authority that it needs to have to make sure that agencies really are competitive. And then lastly, the governor's budget office, all two or three of them. Again, Wizard of Oz effect. But the legislature does maintain a tremendous amount of oversight. The standing committees, the statutory committees, the Legislative Budget Board and the Legislative Audit Committee, lots of media attention, and the Sunset Commission. Now let me explain the Sunset Commission. This came about as a result of some work done by an old professor of mine, Dr. Janice May. She's now dead, been gone for a long, long, long time, because she was about my age when I was a graduate student, 40 plus years ago. It consists of five senators plus a public member appointed by the lieutenant governor and five House members appointed plus a public member appointed by the speaker. They have a staff, and here's the way it works. Every agency is authorized, with some exceptions, for a fixed period of time, and then it has to be recreated by the legislature, or reestablished or reauthorized by the legislature, and if they don't do it, it goes out of existence or is merged with some other agency. This is an example. This is designed to get rid of the deadwood agencies that are not performing well, and to provide a real incentive for agencies to get their collective act together. So when an agency is up for sunset, the staff reviews the reports by the audit, you know, number of reports, and makes a triage. Does everybody know what triage is? You go into the emergency room, and the first person you see, generally, after they find out that you have financial capability to be there, is the triage nurse. What does the triage nurse decide?
If it's an emergency room.
This actually developed during the war, World War II. It developed in the French military first, where a person had combat wounds. They decided, first off, are they hopeless? Is there nothing can be done to save them? If we, by immediate intervention, can we save their life and do something? Or thirdly, are they the walking wounded? That's triage, means to separate into three categories. So the triage nurse takes a look at you and says, this one goes to the ER now. This one, you might as well call the undertaker. Or you go ahead and send them to the ER, but to the trauma center, but it's going to be questionable. And you can sit out here until we have time to deal with you, because you stubbed your toe and you really don't need to be here. So they triage the agencies and decide how deeply they're going to look at them. They then propose to the legislature whether they're going to be abolished, combined with some other existing agency, or reauthorized. Now, always in the past, anytime the legislature was seeking to change an agency, they had to fight lots of entrenched interest to get it done. There was no lever. But now, what's the lever? Make the changes or die. Make the changes or be abolished. Make the changes or be combined with some other agency. As Dr. Janice May pointed out, once you have that leverage, it gets possible to make those changes. Now, if you look at the success of the Sunset Commission, you could say, well, they haven't been very successful because only a handful of agencies have actually been abolished, and that's true. But if you go further, a little more deeply, and look at the number of agencies who've been restructured, reorganized, re-energized, it's pretty impressive. So impressive that a number of other states have adopted this same concept. Now, we were not the first state to do it. Colorado was. And it always kind of ticked Dr. Smith off a little bit because she had presented a paper at one of the professional conferences about a way to deal with state agencies, and a very significant person in Colorado was there and heard the paper and heard the thing and said, hot damn, that's what we need to do. And before the Texas legislature could meet, the Colorado legislature met and established its own version of a Sunset Commission. So we were number two. It originated in Texas, but we were number two to adopt it. And as Porky Pig would say,